We are discussing a very important point in this spiritual practice. The goal is how to obtain love for God. Now, love excludes any type of criticism, any type of fault finding. It is enemy to the development of love. We notice in our day-to-day life, as soon as we find fault with somebody, our so-called love, it immediately becomes lessened. That is where the concept of Guru plays a very huge part. We have already discussed some points about it. Now we will proceed further. According to Hinduism, there are four types of gurus are recognized. Do not think there are four different people or beings, but four manifestations of the same guru. The real guru, as I have mentioned, is God, Satchidananda, who is within each one of us. Then why do we need any other guru? Can we not directly go to the guru who is within us? Actually, this guru is within everybody, including a small insect, a molecule, in everything that is living and non-living. But the problem lies how to access it. There are some highly qualified people who can access this guru. Sri Ramakrishna was a supreme example. He didn't have any external gurus. He simply prayed to the mother. But one point we have to keep in mind is his prayer is wholehearted prayer. Don't we pray wholeheartedly? We do, but we lack one important element. For any prayer to be fulfilled, two conditions must be fulfilled. One, we must pray with all the sincerity that we can command. Pay complete attention. That's not enough. That is only 50%. The other 50% is tremendous faith. Faith here means after praying to God, and whatever happens, that is the right answer. How many of us have that kind of faith? Only if what we desire happens to happen, then we think that God has answered our prayers. As somebody said, you know, does God answer all the prayers? Yes, He answers all the prayers, every prayer. Most of the time the answer is no. So faith means I had prayed and God had heard my prayer and He will do the best that He thinks is good for me. That is called faith. That acceptance is very necessary. Otherwise it is conditional type of prayer. So, in bhakti, in spiritual life, if somebody prays sincerely, then God answers. But to have that kind of reliance, that kind of faith, that kind of sincerity, and more than sincerity, we must know that this prayer is exactly what we need. Psychologists very frequently point out that 99% of what our unconscious thinks is unknown to us. We are not aware of it. Like the tip of an iceberg, it is only whatever is on the surface consciousness that we are aware of. Now, for a prayer to be fulfilled, the entire mind must be made into one. That means it must be a truthful prayer, not a hypocritical prayer. Let me give a small example. Suppose somebody says he wants something, but the other half of his mind says, no, if it is not there, then that will be better. There are also people who do not want to pass examinations. Do you know that? one of the direct disciples of Sri Ramakrishna, he prayed to the Divine Mother, "Oh Mother, please make me fail." That's because his parents were threatening that if he passes well, they will marry him off. And he didn't want to get married. So the only way he could avoid this is by failing the exam. So what happened? The whole mind must be made one. According to Sri Ramakrishna, what is called truth. You know what was his definition? Mon, mok, ak, kora. Make the mind and the mouth one. What is he saying? What the psychologists are saying, that let the unconscious and the conscious be one. How many of us are capable of understanding the unconscious? And that's why our prayer, first of all, we do not know what exactly we need. Secondly, we are divided in our minds. Part of the mind says no, part of the mind says yes. Another funny example I give, quoting Peter's principle. Do you know what is Peter's principle? A man goes on climbing in his life until he reaches his incapacity. That is, suppose a small clerk, he becomes assistant manager, then manager, and some higher post. How long is he going to go on climbing? Until he becomes unfit to hold that job any longer. After that, he will suffer, the others also will suffer. So, supposing somebody says, "I want to be a big officer." I will also give a funny example, you know, a big officer. Now, this man is not that dumb. He has got some intelligence. He knows that if I become this officer, if I get this higher post, lot of salary, lot of perks. But he also knows how much blood pressure will go up under those circumstances. What he really wants is all those benefits without the blood pressure. Always these two go together. Higher offices and responsibilities go together. So part of his mind is saying, if I attain this high job, then I will have less time for cinemas, for chit-chatting, for escaping from the office, and all those things. A little bit of his surface mind says, it will be nice if I have a big house, I will have respect, I will have power, etc. Now, depending upon how much his unconscious is pulling him down, most likely his prayers will not be fulfilled. Or if God is angry, he will fulfill his desire and make him suffer for that. Conscious and the unconscious must be made together. To be aware of the unconscious is a tremendous spiritual effort. One must be constantly aware. And Sri Ramakrishna was so pure that he was continuously aware of what is going on inside. And later on, whenever he was instructing his disciples, he particularly was observant of whether they were being hypocritical. Those who studied the life of Swami Vivekananda, you know that at one point in his life, he was his family was suffering. His father died and he was under debt and he couldn't get a job. He couldn't maintain his mother and brothers and sisters. He was the eldest. And by the way, you know, Swami Vivekananda had an elder brother who died when he was very young. Did you know that? Yeah. All the responsibility came and nobody was helping him. At that time, his mind was completely distracted, natural. So he came to Dakshineswar and he was such a marvelous singer. Sri Ramakrishna asked him to sing and he started to sing. "Oh mind, let us think of God 24 hours a day." And Sri Ramakrishna stopped him and said, "Why do you sing something which you do not feel? You just sing, 'Oh mind, let us think of God,' half an hour in the morning, half an hour in the evening." You know, it's a kind of hypocrisy because there is no feeling behind. Sri Ramakrishna was very particular. Whatever we are doing, we must try to be identified with it. If you are meditating, you meditate. But suppose you sit for meditation and thinking a lot of other things. Outside, you are giving an impression to people that you are really meditating. But what are you doing? I am not talking about the struggle that goes on. None of us have come to that standard where we sit for meditation, we are absorbed. But a sincere effort not to think of anything else, but only to think of God. That is what God appreciates. So, Narendra had got a big, blow that he was singing like that, though he was not feeling. Yet it was the same Narendra Nath who, when he met Sri Ramakrishna for the first time, sang two songs. O mind, let us go back to our own home. O mind, shall all my days go in vain. Mano chalo nijani ketane jabe kiye dinamar. And Sri Ramakrishna understood this man's whole mind was actually feeling the burden of these two songs. So Sri Ramakrishna himself was like that. There was absolutely no hypocrisy in him. What he thinks, what he speaks and what he does completely becomes one. It accords. That is what he used to call truthfulness. So for a prayer to be fulfilled, according to Sri Ramakrishna, the mind and the mouth, means the conscious and the unconscious, must become completely one. How many of us are capable of saying, yes, we pray like that? Apparently, at times of distress, we feel that sincerely we are praying for something. But as soon as that period is over, then what is our condition? So, hypocrisy doesn't mean at some point we are very sincere and at other times we have the freedom, the license to behave as we like. Are you with me? You see, supposing a person is praying, let me be a spiritual person. Maybe sincerely he is feeling. But after 1 hour, when he goes out, his mind is on worldly things. Can we say he is sincere? So, it is not only the conscious and unconscious becoming one, it is also at all times the man's mind should be fixed on one ideal. That alone shows sincerity. Then only there would be progress. That is why spiritual life is so hard. Otherwise, most of us would have been realized results by now. So, a person like Sri Ramakrishna, who had practiced tremendous amount of spiritual disciplines and was completely aware of all the contents of his mind, if such kind of person prays to God, please guide me, then the Sachidananda, who is the inner guru within, then he will respond. And that's what happened to Sri Ramakrishna. At every step, there was an inner voice which came and told him, you do this, you do this, you do this, one after the other. He never had any physical guru excepting a bit of initiation in the beginning. And all the rest of the time, all the realizations, including Nirvikalpa Samadhi, he had solely through this intense yearning. After that, the gurus came. Why did the gurus come? Now he had all the realization. He wanted to see God. He wanted to realize God. And exactly that was what happened. Why was it necessary for him to have other gurus? I am not saying this. Sri Ramakrishna himself said, when later on, gurus like Bhairavi Brahmani, Thotapuri, they all came. He says that long before they came, I prayed intensely to the Divine Mother and she showed me everything. Later on, the gurus came and they only showed me what I had already experienced. Why was it necessary? Because he knows that his experiences are completely true. But how do we know? Suppose we also follow Sri Ramakrishna's footsteps, go to some lonely place, say, Oh Lord, I am very sincere. So you appear to me and it won't work, because see, before that prayer and after that prayer, our mind goes to in some other ways. So outer guru is necessary. So I said, Hinduism or Vedanta recognizes four types or manifestations of the guru. First, the real guru is only God, Satchidananda, who is the inner guru in everybody, who is inside everybody. But that guru is the second type of guru that comes, is what is called Antaryami guru, the inner guru. When a person has a physical guru and he follows the disciplines for some time and progresses to a great extent, when his mind becomes purified, then his own mind becomes the guru. And I will talk something about it now. So the third type of guru is called human guru. A God manifests in some human being who had been practicing spiritual disciplines. Either he had realized God or he has advanced in spiritual path to a great extent. A human guru. Apart from these three, Satchidananda guru, Antaryami guru, and then Manushya guru, there is, the Hinduism also recognizes another guru. These are called Upaguru or Siksha guru. Upa means secondary teacher. So in the concept of this is, one, maybe the real guru is sick, or he is not available, or he is dead. Then what shall one do? So you don't need to have the real guru all the time. Suppose somebody is there who can help you in that respect. Somebody is already traveling that path, and that person can also help you. Not only a person, there is also an idea that each one of us have something greater than what we ourselves have. We can learn from anything. I will come back to that subject a little later. Now, there is another concept we must understand, is that this guru tradition is based upon what Hinduism calls incarnations, great teachers or acharyas. Now, Hinduism recognizes four types of spiritual personalities. Four types of spiritual personalities. The lowest type is a person who has realized God. He had known the truth. He obtained self-knowledge. He became liberated, free. His power is very limited. Like a 5-watt bulb, it can only light up a small space in and around him. The second highest, higher than that, is called Acharya. These are very powerful. Even after centuries, their power goes on inspiring people. For example, Saint Paul, Shankaracharya, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya. Even though Shankara was born, 1400 years back, in the 8th century. Even now, his influence, his teachings, even now people read his books, his bhashyas, his commentaries, and classes go on his commentaries. Very, very influential. This is the higher category of a teacher. Even higher than that is what we call Ishwarakoti or Nityamukta in Sri Ramakrishna's words, the companions that come along with the incarnation, like Swami Vivekananda, like Ananda, like Arjuna. These are very powerful souls. The message spreads universally through these great souls, and they may not establish any particular school of philosophy, but their influences, they can bring a tremendous upheaval in the realm of ideas. They are not much concerned about sects, religious sects, but they are much concerned to bring about upheaval in the very way people think. what they call the spirit of the age. Every age has certain spirit. This age has certain spirit, this 21st century. Do you know what is the spirit? It is called reason. Always you go there. Why? No, your children will be asking. You don't do that. Why? First you must explain to them, and then you must bribe them not to do it. You know, bribing and punishing, rewarding and punishing, behavioralist therapy. This is the age of not faith. Some ages are called faith, means just people believe, that's all. Even the idea, why should we believe, why we should not question, that idea doesn't arise in their minds. Nowadays, everything has got to be explained to them. So this is the spirit. So many, many people, you know, they are good people. But we all suffer from this kind of thing. Maybe it is true, maybe it is not true. So it kind of doubting kind of age. So accordingly, these great souls also must modify their teaching. That is why when Swami Vivekananda first met Sri Ramakrishna, he went and asked, "Have you seen God?" Why do you think he asked this question? Have you seen God? Do you think he doesn't know? He is representing our spirit and say, if you have not seen God, then what right have you got to speak about God? Like a scientist, you know. A scientist who just speculates some scientific truth and tells, do you think he will be believed? He must do the experiment. He must prove to himself. Not only that, anybody should be able to replicate that experiment and get the same results. Then only that theory will be acceptable. That is the spirit in which Narendranath asked. And Sri Ramakrishna also gave a scientific reply, as I discussed last time. He said, I have seen God, but that is no answer, because how do you know he has seen God? Only when you see God, you know that he has seen God. Otherwise, no. So this is a scientific age. That's why Narendranath had to explain everything in a scientific manner. Have you noticed that? No acharya in the past had ever explained spiritual truths, you know, using reason and logic. But Swami Vivekananda had to do, because this is the fad. This is that age. If you simply quote scriptures, my scripture is telling like that, people won't believe. You have to explain scientifically, and that is why he had taken the help of what is called science to explain spiritual truths. So these are the third highest category of spirits. Then the fourth highest category is avatara purushas, incarnations. They bring about a tremendous change effortlessly. Like, you know, the whole Ganga will be turned back on its face. That only a superhuman power like an incarnation can do. And if we are to believe Swami Vivekananda, there are people who are even more powerful and greater than incarnations of God. But the world doesn't know anything about them. Somewhere they are there, silently they just live. And they just pass away. But such powerful thoughts they broadcast, that brings about a balance in the running of this world. Hindus believe that every age has a rishi, a seer, a most powerful spiritual personality who is in charge of this whole universe. And in this age, Vishwamitra Rishi is the in charge. Don't ask me, how do I know? This is just a faith, belief like that. We call it Manu also in Sanskrit language. They call it Manu. One Manu will be in charge of one particular yuga. So that silently he manifests his power. So these are the four categories that we see. Now the point is, this guru tradition comes from the incarnation of God. And it percolates down from him to the Ishwara Koti, and from him to the Acharya, from him to the ordinary persons. So, here there is something very interesting that we have to understand, that you will see in any particular age, in any particular region, one incarnation's teachings, they become the guiding force, as it were, that is the current map through which people have to guide their spiritual lives. So in this age, we believe it is the teachings of Sri Ramakrishna, as interpreted by Swami Vivekananda, that would be the guiding map. And any guru, let it be a Christian, let it be a Muslim, let it be anybody, they have to follow this particular map. So every guru that comes is only a reinterpreter. He only buys this particular map, but he puts his own stamp. Like all the computers are made in Hong Kong. Only, you know, this IBM, this is, you know, this company's name is stamped there. And if they do not do it, two things happen. One, they will be misguiding people because it will not be in the right spirit. And secondly, not only misguiding, they can also lead to bloodshed, conflicts and wars and those things. But well, there is one rule, one law in this universe. If a person is sincere, he will somehow come across this map, wherever he may be. Some people might not have heard the name of Sri Ramakrishna or Swami Vivekananda. But if they are sincere, they come exactly to the same conclusion. Why? Because the truth is the same. There is a universal mind. And any mind who becomes fit to become connected with that universal mind will receive the same message, the same broadcasting truth. So all gurus do not do anything else but follow this particular map. So let us keep this division in mind, that incarnations are the founders of this guru, or guru means an ideal, a path, pathways. And Sri Ramakrishna had definitely established these pathways. He did not become sectarian, fanatic, narrow-minded. He said, all religions are true. Every religion is capable of taking one to the same. But he also added, there is no need to quarrel. Not only that, there is a need to respect, to revere other religions, other saints. That is the particular age. There is, I will not go into it, but the reason for that is, this is an age where the whole world has come very near to each other through revolutions in two fields, transportation and telecommunication. And therefore, people are living side by side. And their habits are different. Habits are different because their culture is different. Their culture is different because their religious traditions are different. So to have some kind of harmony, we must try to understand the other person's viewpoint. Then only we can live in harmony together. That is why Sri Ramakrishna's and Swami Vivekananda's teachings are very, very appropriate for this particular age. With this, we will just go. I will just first of all read Swami Vivekananda, what he has to say about incarnate teachers and incarnation. Higher and nobler than all ordinary ones are another set of teachers, the avatars of God in this world. They can transmit spirituality with a touch, with a mere wish. The lowest and most degraded characters become in 1 second saints at their command. They are the teachers of all teachers, the highest manifestations of God through man. We cannot see God except through them. We cannot help worshipping them. And indeed, they are the only ones whom we are bound to worship. There is a profound truth in this. Two kinds of men do not worship God as man. The human brute who has no religion, and the saint who has risen beyond all the weaknesses of humanity and has transcended the limits of his own human nature. To him, all nature has become his own self. He alone can worship God as He is. In the spiritual path, the first step that an aspirant takes is to seek a competent guru. The guru-sishya relationship in India is not a temporary teacher-student contract. It is a sacred spiritual relationship based on the total involvement, commitment, and obligation of two persons who are bound to each other forever. Total involvement. The guru cannot say, I will be a guru only for Monday to Friday and 9 to 5. He is a guru for all the 24 hours. And there is also what is called commitment. Is commit. Once the promise is there, the guru accepts the disciple and the disciple accepts the guru. They commit to each other. I am bound to you and you will be bound to me. And there is no breaking of that. Only with the destruction of ignorance, the relationship is dissolved. What happens then? Once somebody asked, can Guru give God realization? And Swami Brahmananda said yes. And then the next question, then what happens to the Guru? He gives God realization and then what he goes away. Does he go away? That was his immature understanding. Then Swami Brahmananda explained, no, the Guru takes the disciple by hand, slowly, slowly towards God. And when he is telling you, just a little more, and then you will see God. And then what does he do? When the last step comes, the Guru says, just wait a second, you will see God. And he goes and stands in front of him. Then what happens? He is God. So who is taking him step by step all the time? It is only God in the form of a human being. Is taking him, and at last the Guru merges in God, because there is human language. Merges means something is merging into something else. No, the Guru is transformed. That means by the time the disciple becomes so enlightened that he sees that, oh, all the time he whom I have been considering just as my Guru, now he is the God himself. Muko kaha dhunde, mai to tere paas mein hoon. Deeper than any other human relationship, the relationship between the Guru and the disciple is the purest and most sublime relationship known to man. And that is the type of relationship we have to establish between ourselves and God. Swami Vivekananda defined religion very beautifully. You know what he said? It is an eternal relationship between the eternal God and the eternal devotee. Because both must be eternal. Otherwise, the relationship will not be eternal. Eternal relationship means both must be eternal. How can there be two eternals? There is only one eternal. Ultimate realization comes to that. In the devotional sects, the Guru occupies a place next only to the personal God. So, as I said, that Hindu scriptures recognize three kinds of Gurus: the Divine Guru, the Inner Guru, and the Human Guru. Sri Ramakrishna says, Satchidananda is the only Guru. In all beings, an immanent aspect of the Supreme Divine Guru exists as the inner controller, Antaryami. God is the teacher of all teachers, because these teachers, however great they may have been, gods or angels, are all bound and limited by time, while God is not. The inner Guru, Swami Brahmananda says, but know this, there is no greater Guru than your own mind. When the mind has been purified by prayer and contemplation, it will direct you from within. Even in your daily duties, this inner Guru will guide you and will continue to help you until the goal is reached. So here is an answer. what happens to me when my guru goes away or dies or he is somewhere in Belur Mat and I am here. No, he has given you enough directions. You go on proceeding, practicing what he said. And when you go to some extent, your own mind will become your guru. In the beginning, we do not want to accept this because it brings about a conflict. Don't you see that? Supposing, you know, the doctor says, don't eat too many sweets because you have a tendency to be diabetic. Now the problem comes. If he said, don't eat, it would have been all right. If he said, eat, that would have been all right. He says, don't eat too many sweets. What? How many are too many? How many are too many? You know, one man was asked by his doctor, you must not eat too many sweets, just eat one sweet. So he went to the sweetmeat shop and ordered a big laddu like that, like a football. Only one sweet. How much we can deceive ourselves? Only a little bit. And how much time should we watch TV? Just a little bit, you know, just a little bit news. Oh, this seems to be a bit interesting. Just a little bit. You know that little bit? How far it goes? It goes up to 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. But when a person has that purity, that inner discipline, enough is enough. That's it. In order to know spiritual truths, one needs a divine eye or an inner eye, about which Swami Brahmananda says, behind this mind of ours, there is a subtle spiritual mind existing in seed form. Through the practice of contemplation, prayer and japam, this mind is developed, and with this development, a new vision opens up, and the aspirant realizes many spiritual truths. So this is why the Hindus, they go on praying this Gayatri mantra, you know, Tanno Hamsaha Prachodayat. May that divine being guide me. Where is that divine being? Is it somewhere in the sky? No, it is already there in a seed form within each one of us. Through sincere prayer, this seed slowly develops. We have got tremendous intuitive power. But because in many ways, many times we deny it for our own temporary convenience. That is why after some time, it doesn't die, but it becomes very silent. But it will not keep quiet. But there are two dangers involved in the concept of this inner guru. Because as soon as we come to know about the inner guru, oh Swami, how wonderful, your talk today is most marvelous talk. I have been thinking of selecting somebody as my guru. Now you have solved the problem. I don't need you. I have the inner guru. There are two dangers involved in it. What is this? One is to confuse it with reason. You know, through reasoning, we come to some conclusions. Most of the time, we come to that conclusions. And we mistake it as though our inner heart is telling us that. Through reason, our reason is so impure. Our reason is so, limited or biased. Our reason tells so many things. 50 years back, even now also, if a Brahmin sees what he used to call an untouchable, he is an impure person. And he's, how do you know? Because his reason, my reason tells me, my tradition tells me, my forefathers tell me, this person is dirty clothes, he doesn't take bath, and he deals with all these low type of things. That is why he is an untouchable. He doesn't understand that there could be saints in among untouchables too. It is not the outer form, as the Astavakras story tells us. So one of the great dangers about trusting our inner guruship, or inner guru means what? Whatever we feel, we think that is God is giving us directions. How many madcaps are there who go on having this inner directions? Is it not? now are confused with reason. Reason is not meant to be inner guru. It is the intuition that is supposed to be the inner guru. So the second danger is to mistake one's own unconscious desires and fantasies for the divine voice or divine command. So sometimes reason also is not accepted. But like something I feel like that, you know, in my guts is called gut feeling. Trust your gut feeling. Only time when you can trust your gut feeling is when you are hungry. Other times, don't trust it. Because most of this gut feeling is only an instinctive desire. If you have bias, if you are biased, if you are fanatical, then your gut voice is absolutely doomed to make you fanatic. So then comes the human guru. So the human guru is the agent who awakens the inner guru and brings about the union of the individual spirit with the supreme spirit. That is the main work of the guru he actually performs. Now the guru has many functions to perform. So first one function is, the first is to instruct the aspirant about his spiritual idea and the means of attaining it. In the path of devotion, this means helping the aspirant to fix his mind on his chosen deity through a technique called meditation, which the guru himself had practiced and tested in his own life. The guru removes the darkness of ignorance about the path from the mind of the disciple. So that is why the very word guru. Go means andhakara. Ru means he who removes the ignorance, darkness of knowledge. He who destroys the ignorance. That is why he is called a guru. Now here is an interesting example how it works. There are many sincere aspirants, but they might feel that they know what they are doing. They think what they are doing is right. They think the path they are following is right. One such example in the life of Sri Ramakrishna is Vijay Krishna Goswami. You know, he was a member of the Brahmo Samaj, worshipping the formless aspect of God. And Sri Ramakrishna, the moment his eyes set upon Vijay Krishna Goswami, simply called him out and said, look, this is not your path. This is not your path. You're in your blood. For the last four centuries, is flowing the blood of devotion. And Vijay Krishna Goswami himself did not understand it properly. And immediately, Sri Ramakrishna slowly instructing him, brought him out. Then only Vijay Krishna Goswami started to progress rapidly in spiritual path. Not that Brahmo Samaj path is bad. But that was not suitable for his particular nature. So this, a guru is one who understands the mental setup of the disciple and gives him the appropriate path. Another example I will give you, funny example though. There was a disciple of Sri Ramakrishna called Girish Chandra Ghosh. He was a drunkard and he used to abuse Sri Ramakrishna. And Sri Ramakrishna used to delight. He accepted it and he delighted in it. Another drunkard who also became imitated Girish like Girish Chandra Ghosh, he thought, oh, Sri Ramakrishna loves to be abused because Girish Chandra Ghosh used to, I will also abuse him. The moment he opened his mouth, Sri Ramakrishna became very grave and said, look here, that is not your attitude. Shut up. Because otherwise I will throw you out. Because, you know, they can understand that the mental attitudes of, it is not coming from within, it is only an imitation. Once Holy Mother, she initiated a devotee. And he belonged to what is called a Vaishnava, he was a worshipper of Vishnu. And Mother gave him the mantra of Shakti, the Divine Mother. And he protested. Actually, he had no right to protest. Having accepted her as the guru, whatever the guru says, that must be final. He protests, Mother, I don't like this mantra. And immediately mother told Baba, I know what is your mantra. So just go on practicing. He didn't like it a bit. But what can he do? Went on practicing. It took him nearly 15 years to realize that he had more devotion to Divine Mother than to Vishnu. You see, they had the power to see what is appropriate and what helps the disciple. Of course, we are talking about very competent, great people like Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother, Swami Vivekananda, etc. But even an ordinary guru, sometimes they can see the things much better than we ourselves can see. So this is one of the first things he first of all tells, this is your chosen deity and this is your particular path. The guru does not merely inform, he instills faith in the disciple. Faith is not just a simple belief. It is the orientation of the soul towards an ultimate goal. It is the awakening of the soul from its sleep of ignorance. This awakening comes only when the burning words issuing from the lips of an experienced preceptor touch and inflame the heart of the aspirant. In this connection, I also mentioned upagurus or sikshagurus are secondary teachers. Now there is a famous story of Avadhuta in the Bhagavatam, where the Avadhuta had how many gurus? 24 gurus. And in Mahabharata, we come across a beautiful story. A low-caste man wanted to be a disciple of Dronacharya to learn archery. But the guru rejected him because he was very proud. I have princes as my disciples. I won't accept the third-class fellow. But the disciple said, whether you accept me or not, I have accepted you. It is said, you know, Indira Gandhi was the Prime Minister of India at one time. She went to Nagaland and met. Nagaland is a northeastern part of India and is full of tribals. And there she met a tribal leader. And he immensely liked her. He fell in love with her. So after she left, he printed wedding cards. I'm going to wed, you know, Indira Gandhi. So naturally people were surprised. So, have you consulted Indira Gandhi? He said, no, 50% everything is arranged. On my part, I am ready. So Ekalavya, he decided, whether you accept me or not, you are going to be my guru. And sometimes the other way thing also happens. The disciple doesn't want the guru. But the guru says, I have accepted you as my disciple. It's a wonderful thing, you know, it happens. It happened in the life of Sri Ramakrishna. I will tell you an interesting story. So Ekalavya went. What did he do? He fashioned an image of Dronacharya and went on practicing archery, and he became the best archer at that time. And the guru could not bear, one day when he came to the guru and saw this skill of this disciple whom he rejected, and it was a sad story, he said, you have to give what is called the fee, Guru Dakshina. And he wanted, you know, you cut off your thumb, so that he can never again practice archery. Without the thumb, you know, archery cannot be practiced. But it is just to illustrate, if we are devoted to the guru, a picture, an icon, an image, any suggestion, anything will be a guru. It will take us to the goal. It depends upon us. That is why, even if the guru is not a competent guru, if the disciple is a competent disciple, he will reach his goal. In fact, you know, Ramakrishna was a much better, much greater spiritual personality than all his gurus put together, whether it is Totapuri or Bhairavi, Brahmani or anybody. Competence. But that is not to say we should neglect. So, not only that, our attitude should be, we must be open to learn anything from anybody. I'm telling you, it's all of you have something in you which I do not have. Somebody can sing better, somebody can speak better, somebody can write better. Recently I saw a beautiful cartoon, you know. I liked it very much. There was two spectators were witnessing. All the doctors went on strike. So one of the spectators is asking, what is this about? All of them are moving. He said, I only know that it is the doctors who are on strike. But what they want, we don't, because I can't read what they are written. You know, the boards they have written. Doctors writing, nobody can Everybody has something, including buffaloes, politicians. They can be our gurus. What can we learn from politicians? You know, how much criticism is leveled against them. Do you think they are losing sleep? What a wonderful quality they have. If we can develop that thickest skin like buffaloes, let anybody talk anything. We are not moved. We have become so sensitive, even the slightest thing raises our blood pressure, is it not? So we have a lot to learn from everybody. So these upagurus are very necessary because they can teach us many, many things. Even Sri Ramakrishna had learnt many things from Brahmo Samaj. First of all, he learnt two things from Brahmo Samaj. Do you know what it is? Even though Brahmo Samaj people were not what is called spiritual people, but Sri Ramakrishna's mind was open. His famous often reiterated statement is, Jabat Bachi Tabat Shiki. As long as I live, so long do I learn. And he learned two important truths from Brahmo Samaj. What did he learn? It's very interesting in this context. What did he learn? The first thing he learned was that to work very efficiently, an organization is much better than a single individual. Because first of all, Sri Ramakrishna came to be known to the whole Calcutta people. Through whom? Through Brahmo Samaj, the organization. And the second thing that he had learned was that before he came into contact with Brahmo Samaj people, Sri Ramakrishna was very naive. He used to think everybody was like him, absolutely having faith, and when a guru says something, he will just swallow what you call hook and bait and everything. But then he came to know these people are skeptical, they go on questioning, testing, doubting, and asking the same thing again and again. He understood the modern spirit and said that these people are not like me. Funny thing happened, you know. Long before Sri Ramakrishna's sadhana, spiritual practices were over, he had a vision from the Divine Mother. Many, many devotees would come to him. And slowly, you know, after some time, is Narendranath, Swami Vivekananda, Swami Brahmananda, and Swami Turiyananda, all these started coming. Swami Yogananda and all these people. And Sri Ramakrishna was not very happy because they were testing him, they were questioning him, they were doubting him, they were making fun, you know. Swami Vivekananda used to make fun of Sri Ramakrishna. Once he taught in the room, this mat is God, this everything is God. That was the topic. And immediately after hearing that, they went out into the veranda. He and Hajira started laughing, ho, 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 like that. Sri Ramakrishna, in a semi-conscious mood, he went, why are you laughing so much? What were they doing? Oh, this cot is God, this mat is God, this cat is God. Even, you know, they took the teaching of Sri Ramakrishna, was making fun of him. That is the type of people. Sri Ramakrishna believed in images, you know. He used to go to the temples. Narendranath, passed remark, even now he goes there. About Sri Ramakrishna, about his guru. Passing remark about his guru. So, Sri Ramakrishna did not think these were the devotees whom Divine Mother showed him in his vision. So one day he went to Mother, you showed me, you told me that lot of devotees are going to come. Where are they? He said, Baba, why? This is Narendra, this Rakal, these are the devotees. Oh, but these are the people who doubt me, test me, question me. She laughed and said, Baba, this is the stuff that will come these days. If this was the complaint of Sri Ramakrishna about people like Narendranath and others, I don't know whether he would have dared to complain about people like us. So Sri Ramakrishna had learnt an important lesson that this would be the type of people that will come nowadays. So that's why he used to tell to Brahma Samaj people, minus head and tail, you just take, means you take whatever suits you. And he understood an organization is very necessary to spread the Divine Mother's work message. And that's why it was he who founded the Ramakrishna Order, not Swami Vivekananda. Swami Vivekananda was waiting for the opportune moment to found this Ramakrishna Order. But it was not Swami Vivekananda who founded it. It was said during the last few months of Sri Ramakrishna's life, every day Sri Ramakrishna used to call Narendranath, close the doors and windows, not allowing any of his other would-be monastic disciples to come anywhere near, and instruct Narendra 3 to 4 hours. And what passed between them at that time, there was no news. But we infer that this was what he was talking about, organization, how to set up, what would be the aims, and all those things. So these are the two things he learned. So all of us have something to learn from the other person, some quality, some talent, something, some good thing. And that is also part of spiritual discipline. How to see what is the best thing in the other person. Otherwise, we will not progress in spiritual life. That ability to see the good in others is part of spiritual progress. That is why Holy Mother used to say, do not find fault with others. How can we not find fault with others? What is the way to stop fault in others, finding fault with others? Only when we practice seeing good actively, consciously, then only we can stop seeing the faults. Swami Vivekananda had this quality in an immense degree. He says, in the Bindu Te Sindhu Deka, in a drop, he used to see an ocean. If Holy Mother saw some little good, she would magnify it like an ocean. And that is why people were attracted to her, because she has nothing to find fault. She said, anybody can find fault. Why should I join their group? Why should any spiritual aspirant join the group? So that is one of the things, is that we can learn from anybody, that is, we can learn from many gurus. This is part of the thing. The need of a competent guru is even more necessary after the aspirant has acquired the preliminary virtues and when he finds himself grappling with the unknown forces of the spiritual world. The psychic high tension wires is as risky as playing with fire. This is a very important point. The necessity of a guru doesn't stop with mere initiation. Initially, we don't need too many spiritual instructions. But once we go to some distance, progress in spiritual life, then we enter into an unknown realm. There, no books will help. Only a guru, a real guru, can help. There are some other points here, beautiful points. We will discuss it next week. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.